Welcome to the Wally Show Aftercast, all the things we did not get to during the course of the show today. If you listen to the podcast, you will hear none of Betty Rock's voice because she is out today sick and tomorrow sick and then maybe back on Monday following, what is it, COVID protocol!
Oh, she broke.
She did. She was like, she made fun of us because Gavin had COVID 14 times. I had it once. And then she's like, I have tiger blood. I have tiger blood. I'll never get it. And she started not feeling good on Tuesday. And then I don't know what prompted her to take a test because she hasn't taken a test yet. I think she had it once before.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, but she never took a test.
Well, she's also most of the time been sick on vacations
yeah.
and times when it just didn't really matter and it
yeah.
didn't necessarily need to be tested, but
yeah,
I guess she felt the call.
Yeah, so she didn't sound too awful yesterday. She has like the body aches and the stuffy head. That's all I had. Like I didn't get it bad. I was really lucky. Gavin, you said you got it worse.
I got it worse. Like the second time, not so fun. The first time, totally normal. Just super generic. But yeah, that for some people. I know it's just a cold. I know
yeah.
it's super simple, so maybe that's just her case.
Fortunately,
right now.
That's where it's got. I do understand that COVID was a much bigger deal early on, at least the government tells us. But no, it was. I mean, there were people we know that got like really sick.
Oh, yeah.
Some people lost loved ones that we know and stuff, so I get that. I would not have tested when I came back from my vacation because I didn't feel bad. I got a cold. But the only reason I tested was because the people next to us, directly next to us, that we had a lot of contact with on our cruise, both tested for COVID
sure.
on the cruise. And then they got quarantined on the boat. They had to spend the rest of their cruise. They had like 1.5 days of fun, and the rest was all in their room.
That's a terrible time.
Oh, that's a horrible vacation. The cruise line was good to them,
yeah.
You know, and they gave them credits for this and their money back, and they brought them food every night, like nice stuff. And the people that were at their table that did not get sick, they brought them dessert every night from dinner,
oh,
which
so
was nice. We gave them card games that we had, and at the end, they're like, do you want these back? We're like, nope, we're good, keep them.
Those are your COVID cards.
Forever, you get to have them forever.
Yeah.
But they were the nicest people. I felt so bad for them that's how they had to spend their, you know, time. And we would like talk over the balcony. We'd like lean out on the balcony and talk and stuff.
Because, yeah, they're just people who are trying to have
yeah.
the fun trip of a lifetime.
And they didn't feel good either. Like, because I was like, oh, because she had said if they hadn't tested, they wouldn't have been quarantined.
Sure.
But the minute they tested, and she was like, well, I didn't want to get anyone else sick just in case. And then they had 2 days where they did not feel good. And so, yeah, I would have been tempted to not test and just, self, you know, secluded, you
sure.
know, kind of thing.
And just try and have a good time.
Yeah.
And nowadays, I think there's more of a argument per se for people who maybe they just have what is a cold.
Right.
Deciding not to test. Because
right.
in the past, all you've ever done is maybe if you're sick, you know, you tell people.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not this thing you go around worrying too much about in your daily life. But then COVID shows up and that forced us all to have to, you know, stick something up our nose. And
it's so funny, too, like how COVID changed all the rules. Like
uh-huh.
everyone was so big about HIPAA. You sign all these HIPAA things, HIPAA. No one can know your, you know, medical stuff. And then COVID comes. It's like, okay, everyone has the right to know everything about
yeah.
you, where you've been, who you've been with the last, you know,
yeah,
10 minutes.
Track
or, you know.
Down your,
yeah.
last, your last few days of contact.
Yeah, it got nuts. It was like HIPAA what? No, we're not doing HIPAA anymore. No, we're going to do this now.
Do I have to call my grocery store cashier
well,
and tell them that I...
Think about it. Like if this had been the beginning of COVID, Betty goes, and we all had close contact with her. You know, she made me chunky butter bread toast, you
yeah,
know.
Just yesterday, right?
Yeah. And so, you know, it's like.
I sit next to her every day.
Exactly. And so that would have been like, okay, she's out. We would have been quarantined. It would have been
yeah.
12 to 14 days for all of us to be quarantined.
That's
like,
so
what
much,
a different world.
Yeah. This
I've
is,
forgotten that already.
I know. When it was out of the gate, I mean, this world was as different as I've ever seen it. Probably ever will see it.
Probably.
Again, hopefully.
Yeah, and then every time I get really paranoid, though, when I see, like, headline stories, like, they go, measles outbreak. You're like, no,
don't.
Because the minute you start saying outbreak, then all the other red flags go up, and before you know it, they're like, we're in a pandemic
yeah,
again.
Now we're conditioned.
We're going to never leave our houses,
yeah.
you know, and stuff. Like, because that was crazy.
Fun.
Unusual time. There was parts of it that I did enjoy. Like I loved, I did the grocery shopping and I did enjoy going grocery shopping at 7 a.m. At Kroger with just a few people all masked up and gloves on and stuff. And it was always the same people every week. And so we got to know each other. Hey, how you doing? Did you see any rice? Is there rice today?
Is the ketchup back?
It felt as dystopian without being dangerous as you could get.
That's
you
funny.
Know? And so you got to live a little bit of that. What's going to be here today? What are we going to make for dinner, you know, with what we have? It was kind of like there's parts of it that I actually really liked and just hanging out, you know. But Gavin and I, we came to work every day. Like, so it wasn't like a COVID, like free pass for us. We had to keep coming in. We were the only ones in the building for most of that time.
I was thinking the other day, I had a Lysol wipe, and I was just wiping stuff down because I haven't been feeling good. Betty obviously wasn't. I was just wipe this down for you know, whatever sake. But I remember that was a literal part of finishing the show. Was
every
that
day.
You and I would finish up, and we would not sit near each other. Or talk And then I would wipe the entire studio down, knobs and all.
Yeah.
And that was just part of the gig. And I remember I'm like, there were weeks, and I'm like, I think my hands smell good.
it was a different time.
But then you fast forward to, what are we, this is 3 years later.
Yeah.
And Betty's got it.
Yeah.
And we're not
like,
freaking out.
All right, all right. And I mean, my wife, because we're going on vacation and we got other trips. I got work trips coming up. And my wife was like, were you close to her? I'm like, yeah, all day, you know.
Well, and my wife is pregnant. It was I don't know the world of pregnancy and COVID, but there's some stuff. It's fine to be a little bit scared.
Sure.
It's nice that it's not 3 years ago scared.
Yeah, your wife's gonna be more cautious about everything for the next little bit. And rightfully so.
Yeah.
Like when you're having your first baby, everyone puts so much fear into you that you're going to harm your baby with this, and this. And so you read everything and then you do it all. And then like a kid or two in, balance gets restored. And you're like, okay, this isn't the end of the world. But speaking of a different world, this was interesting. Baby Olivia isn't a real baby. It's an animated fetus that develops over the course of like a 3-minute video. But it is causing a stir in a few different states. There's bills in Iowa and Kentucky and Missouri and West Virginia that would require public schools to have students watch a video like Baby Olivia, which is great. But the pushback is like, this is from people that support anti-abortion. Well, it's from people that have a different viewpoint than abortion, and they support pro-life. And we're in a world where we have different viewpoints, and yours is not the only viewpoint that matters. Mm-hmm. And I find it so crazy that these people are like, no, you cannot show these videos to kids about the other choice that's there. You only want to show them choices of abortion, which jacks these young girls up mentally, you know, as well. I get all the arguments for, you know, rape and all these other, like, fine. We can have that discussion, you know, as part of this at a later time. But the reality is, for a lot of people, it's a quick fix to a problem that they don't want to deal with. And they don't realize the emotional distress that takes on them years down the road. Talk to women that have been there, and they will tell you this. You know, this isn't me just putting my guy spin on it. This is like actual women that are like, yeah, this was one of the worst mistakes I've ever made. So why not, in a society where we have, you know, different viewpoints, have all viewpoints expressed then? You know, it's like if there is a pro-choice, then you should absolutely have the pro-life option for these kids to learn about. You
and
know,
it should
it's crazy.
All be taught equally.
Exactly.
If you're going to go down the route of equal, you know, treatment in public schools or of this world.
That's what I'm always about, is just balance it out. Like you've swung so far to the left side with all of the LGBTQ stuff and all of this nonsense. You've swung so far that way. Just balance it out. Bring it back and have what the other side says. Mm-hmm. And then let somebody decide. That's truly loving somebody, and that's truly giving them the choice. When you only provide one choice, absence of choice is not a choice, you know? And so it's funny, though, that teaching the kids about the value of life is indoctrinating them in a religious sense, but promoting abortion is education. Like, it's lunacy to me. I saw this guy, he's a really right-wing conservative guy on TikTok, but he said, sending your kids to church is indoctrinating them in religion, but drag queen story hour with kids is education. Mm-hmm. He's absolutely right, but that speaks to the balance of this. You know, it's like, oh, well, what's his name? Kirk Cameron wanted to read a book that had a faith-based perspective, and they're like, you can't do that. But the same places that were saying, you can't do that, wanted drag queen story hour.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, well, you're in indoctrinated because it matches your viewpoint and what you want. Like Cameron wasn't saying, hey, just do mine and get rid of everything else. He's like saying, if you're going to do this, then you should at least do this and include this as well. It was a library. It wasn't a school, actually. But it's just, that's kind of the frustrating thing in this world that we're in right now, that we'll see what happens in the 8 months.
It's just interesting because, you know, we're having our kid later this year and we've started the process of trying to hunt down a daycare. And for me, you're going through these processes of choosing a place that you think is going to A, take care of your kid well, but the place, one place that we love is Nashville Christian High School. It's a great school and they've got an infant care and a kids care system. And I have a lot of faith in that because it's tied to our church. It's a big Christian organization. Like, I'm like, oh, that would be a perfect place to have my kid be taught or to be, you know, cared for and educated. And that's all for the fun price of $1,500 a month.
Oh.
Which you hear that and you're like, it would be great if, you know, public schooling or if, you know, if private schools and these places that you do trust weren't outpricing you. Basically take a paycheck of yours every single month.
Yeah.
And that's just one kid. I know I have a friend, he's got three kids that go to that place and he has a joke.
What?
He's like, I pay four mortgages. I'm like, yeah, you do.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, that is crazy.
So, you know, all that to say is that in my head, I see sending my kid to a public school. So I'm part of a public school system myself. And I think I turned out solid, but my parents also were amazing at teaching us values and faith.
Yeah,
and
you have to back
there.
That up in the home, you know, for sure. If
you can't rely on just the outside world to teach your kids.
And, you know, for some people, they make the choice not to shelter their kids. And other people, I'll say shelter, but you're putting them into a place that has less of some of the problems that are associated with, say, public school. And I don't have a problem with either. My daughter did public school and she did private school, you know. And there was good and bad to both. But if you're doing the public school route, I think you as a parent, it's in your child's best interest to make sure that you are offsetting that with being in church, being your kids at youth group and things like that to help give them that grounding to be able to withstand the conversations that they're going to be pushed on them from teachers and adults, you know.
And I do think that parents do ultimately have that right to make that choice, that if a public school or if a setting is going to, you know, push certain agendas or phrases or books or ideologies too hard and you sense that that's going to be the case, then get them out of there, because that's not what they need every day, because that's without your without your kind of like oversight per se.
I am so glad that I don't have a child in one of these public schools where they're debating the books and things like that or the curriculum. I would probably get arrested because I would be the guy at the, you know, meeting the PTA going berserk on forcing this agenda and putting this stuff in front of my kid. I mean, I'd have a PowerPoint presentation. I'd have all the pictures that they have blown up and on the screen going, this is what they're doing, you know? Yeah. Like, I would go nuts.
I do try to keep my ear to the ground at, you know, I serve at the youth group at our church, and I do. I try to ask these kids, I'm like, is it, because we were doing a study and it's talking about, oh, is it hard to be a Christian as a teenager these days? I'm like, is it, guys? Like, at school.
That's a good question.
Is it hard? And half of them are like, no, totally fine. And we're in Tennessee, and it has more southern leaning, you know, Baptist-oriented stuff rooted in it. But some kids are like, we, you know, we had a moment when they weren't allowing us to pray or pray out loud. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. That's even present now. So, okay, good to know about your school.
I think that is the thing, because a lot of the cases that make it onto TV are what you hope are the minority and not the majority.
And I think they are.
Yeah, they're usually the extreme examples of something, and they're usually in different states. They're not in the red states.
Exactly.
But it is one of those things that, like, for example, my daughter works at Disney, and there's so much swarming around them with the LGBTQ stuff and then, you know, the protests at Disney and things are going crazy. And I asked her just like that. I'm like, hey, are you seeing the stuff that they're saying is on the news? Are you seeing that in real life every day? She's like, absolutely not.
Yeah, because I say that you hear these stories. Like, since I've moved here to Tennessee, I have never interacted with anything like that. I went to a very liberal school in Illinois, saw it all the time. But here, no.
The Target bathroom issue that's lit people up, you know, for so long. And it's like, there are extreme versions that made the news of, you know, disgusting perverts using that loophole, you know. And so that's horrific. But like, I've never in where we live have seen where it's an issue, you know, and stuff. Mm-hmm. And again, like that whole thing too. Like, if I understand, and I understand the gender issues that surround that, but to me, most places still have like a family changing mm-hmm. room, one stall. Yeah. Like, to me, if you are choosing to live in that lifestyle, you know it's going to be controversial, and you choose to go in and you choose to make an issue of it because it's your right to do so, mm-hmm. when you could literally have another option, which is go to this one bathroom by yeah. yourself, and then no one's mad. But then I think a lot of activists are like, but you're teaching yeah. me to not be who I am. Well, you know what? You're not who you are because you changed who you are, you yeah. know? Well, so
I think, too, those people are in this mindset where they force themselves to be an utter minority
right.
and still want the world to, you know, make sure that everything about their life is still normal,
right.
per se, when it's not going to be,
exactly.
which is unfortunate, but they're...
But that's
But then I think they have the backing of the
right.
internet these days that says that people are going to see stories like, oh, I can't believe, you know, Walmart treated me like this, and people will see it, not do too much work themselves,
right.
but they'll be like, oh, yeah, like, we stand for love.
Ah. Oh, I was watching a video earlier of this lady at the Sundance Film Festival, and all these people were chanting for Palestine, and they wanted, you know, they're pro-Palestinian.
I've seen more stuff like that.
It is, and it's
wow.
so great. When you actually go to talk to people, how ignorant they are to what is going on, and you're like, okay, from Palestine, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. What river? What sea? What does that even mean? And none of these white idiot young people can tell you what mm-hmm. any of it means. They don't know. And they're like, apartheid? No, it's not. Genocide? No, it's not. You know, and it's like they're ill-informed. And then the people that are organizing these events, they prey on the ignorance, and then they just want them to hear. Hey, one lady was like, she's like, what's your sign mean? She goes, I don't know, someone handed it to me. And she's out there putting her face and her voice to mm-hmm. something that she has no idea what it is. Hey, did you know that this whole Gaza thing started with a terrorist act? Do you know that? Oh, really? I'm not really educated on that. Really? Because you jumped in late on this and you have no idea what you are protesting for? Mm-hmm. I don't mind people protesting. I get it. If you are pro-Palestinian, fine. But know why you are, you know?
It's like I'm pro the people who are in Palestine not being, like, I'm pro non-war.
Yeah,
I
get that.
People's lives not being at risk, but
right.
I'm definitely not somebody who's going to sit there and say, like, I understand every last detail
sure.
and pick a side. I that's something that I think my generation has a big tendency to do. Which is
I feel bad, genuinely bad for good people that got caught up in war. It's happening in Ukraine. It's happening in Palestine or in Gaza. It's happening everywhere. You know, not everybody that lives in Gaza is a bad person, a member of Hamas or a terrorist. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's facts, you know, but they are, and I'm not going to say they're complicit in it because they live under tyranny themselves, you know, and so you feel bad for the people that get caught up in this as on a human basis, but then you cannot just let terror run free mm-hmm. unchecked just because. And so it's horrible that good people get caught up in the middle of this, but good people were also murdered and slaughtered and streamed on Facebook, you know, in front of people's families by a terrorist mm-hmm. organization. So, like, you have to do something about it. And one thing you don't do historically is mess with Israel, because Israel don't play. Like, Israel has always been, you hit us, we're going to hit you back, we're going to hit you back now, and we're going to hit you back 10 times harder.
Yeah.
You know, and so, and we in the U.S. are like, well, I don't know, we don't want to make anybody mad, and then we waffle over things versus being decisive, you know. So, anyway, let's get on to Beyonce. Beyonce, raising
twist.
Some eyebrows and upsetting some people by accident with her country album.
This ain't Texas.
No, Her mom is coming to her defense. People saying, Beyonce, you're not country. And her mom is saying, that's not true. Her mom said that we actually have celebrated cowboy culture growing up in Texas, where it was understood that it's not just about belonging to white culture. In Texas, there's a huge black cowboy culture, and Beyonce grew up wearing cowboy hats. So I just find it, this is not a race thing as much as it is a music thing to me. Because country music consistently will like take other genres of people and be like, I love you now because you're cool and now you're going to be in our sphere. And then they play the heck out of it. Beyonce won. Darius Rucker from Hootie and the Blowfish. Again, also African-American. So it makes it look like I'm saying it's about race, but it's not. Lil Nas X. Darn it! I guess it is. No. but like, because a lot of the pop stars are African-American, and then they do these crossover things into country. You don't see a lot of rock guys going, although you did see Garth Brooks trying to do a Chris Gaines rock thing back in the day that was
interesting.
Horrible.
That sounds bad.
You see, what's her name, defecting, Taylor Swift defecting from country to pop.
Yeah.
And they welcomed her, but country has just been notorious about that. Like, if you are like, country, because country is supposed to all be about the real lifestyle, you know, and it's not. I mean, genuinely, it's not. It's about the made up lifestyle. And do you have a truck? Do you have everything that looks right?
Yep.
And there are guys that are living it, you know, for sure. And then there are posers that are in it because they can make money and they couldn't make it in another genre.
Yeah, I'm not going to speak to, I would never speak to the every last single country artist these days. But if I went and I listened to local country station and they went song by song, I would probably bet that everyone that they play does not own a tractor.
Right.
Probably does not live, you know, like doing the hard manual labor because they're touring. They're doing their thing.
I do like the country artists that still have like a working farm, you know, and when they're off, that's how they unwind and relax and stuff like that. Like, look at For King and Country.
I was going to bring that up too, yeah.
Yeah, Luke from For King and Country
cows, right?
Has a miniature farm. Yeah.
They're not country singers.
Like, I think he had 5 head of cattle. I think he has more now because that's how you grow your head of cattle.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he's got them on like 5 acres behind his house, and
some people just love that.
Started
lifestyle.
Doing that, yeah. My daughter's boyfriend's parents have a small working miniature farm in Texas.
I do think it's ironic though, because I think I saw it today. I do think they actually released a country song as of
who
for King and Country.
No, they didn't.
I want to say that they paired with a country. I have to go listen to it because sometimes they're like, oh, featuring this country artist, and you're like, oh, it's not a country song. This one actually looked like it might have been a country song.
Tomlin did a country album, like kind of thing, with a bunch of different country artists and stuff. And I think it was still kind of faith based. I think it was like a Christian album, but it just had country singers joining him on
Thomas
it.
Thomas Rhett, Lady A.
Yeah. I remember
Florida,
a couple
Georgia
things
Line.
Off it. I mean, a couple of them weren't bad at all. But
yeah,
I don't think it did well.
Yeah, there's one that we played for a while, the one with Lady A.
Yes. Yeah.
I like the one with Rhett, was I think. But I didn't feel, I didn't listen to it thinking, man, I wish I was riding a tractor listening to this.
Right.
It had the Chris Tomlin vibe to it as well.
Matthew West has a couple country songs he wrote and got recorded, and one with Scotty McCreery that did well.
That's cool.
And then I don't know what his biggest country song is. Like, did he get one that went to like number 10 or something? Like, I'm not sure. Because boy, when you write one country song that goes to number 1, you're making bank.
You are making a lot of money.
Yeah. You're making more in that one year than you probably made in 10 of Christian music.
That was
a
big part of West's story, wasn't it? When we had him in for an interview one time, he talked about having kind of like this deal on the table country music writing.
Yeah.
And then he kind of had this moment when God told him, hey, I'm not done with you doing this music over here. And I think we're all better for it.
Yeah, he walked in and said, I can't do this. And they're like, okay, that's cool. We'll support you. And then he started writing Christian songs. And then he like got to where he got to be his own voice kind of thing and started touring. And he's done great. I'm a big fan. So, I'll tell you, though, I don't hate the Beyonce song. It feels a little pandering, obviously, because you're like, when you hear people talking about stuff, in the country lifestyle. They always throw so many cliches in there, all songs do. But when you know someone's not living that life, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, well, now you're just capitalizing.
Oh, yeah. And it is interesting.
Oh, talk about appropriation. Oh. When you think about it, really, seriously, not to make this racial, it's crazy. Like when somebody, like a white person, puts dreadlocks in and they all go, you're appropriating this culture. Country music is a culture, yeah. you know? And so if all of a sudden you're like, I'm writing songs about wearing cowboy hats and mm-hmm. line dancing, you're appropriating that culture.
Yeah,
but you can't say that without sounding like a racist. Racist, which I don't care about.
I'd have to look through her lyrics again, which, again, if you're going to listen to this song, it's not like...
It's not wholesome.
I'm not going to recommend this
right.
song.
Yeah,
that
yeah.
was a little clip of it. I actually thought it was catchy. And it's about Texas. It's about a card, about cards. Yeah. The song is about, like, you know, lay our cards down. I think it's a romance song.
Sure.
So it's just a card game, which is not tied to country music, but she throws the word Texas in there.
Yeah, well, Texas Hold'em,
Texas
yeah.
Hold'em. But it, so. I think you... I don't think you're wrong.
Yeah. You got any birthdays?
Oh.
Lady Gavin?
Lady Gavin. I wanted to say, let's see. I did not see one for today. What month are we in? We're in February?
Two? Yeah, finishing up in February. He's looking.
No.
We have a spreadsheet.
We've got nothing today. It has been a more frequent thing that I've noticed where we haven't gotten as many birthdays
yeah.
this year.
So if you want to do that, I think you can text birthday to 91979. I think we did it that way for a while. I hope. I'm curious what you get if you text birthday to 91979.
That's funny. I just got a text. I'm just going to. Oh.
What is it?
Nothing.
Birthday. See if it works.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought Betty had set that up. No?
No. Don't text that.
Don't do that? Okay. I thought Betty had set that up.
I just joined a Colorado texting group.
Oh, fantastic.
Don't even understand how that...
Good job. That was fun.
Interesting.
All right. Well, we got some other things we got to do here, and we appreciate you being a potty, so thank you. So we got our friend Andy Irwin on the show with us, and he's the guy behind the movie I Can Only Imagine, and now he has a new movie out called Ordinary Angels starring Hilary Swank, and she is great, by the way. And her passion for this film really comes through in her character, who's like this broken mess, but God still uses her to accomplish a miracle in the life of a desperate single father whose daughter is in need of a liver transplant. True story, by the way. Now, the one thing I love about you, Andy, is that your movies are not preachy. I would put this somewhere like... you got Blindside at one end,
yeah.
and you've got War Room at the other. You guys are ahead of Blindside on the faith, but way under War Room, you know? But it's done in a way that's like accessible and not off-putting, and it's not heavy-handed.
I think it preaches as good as any of the films that we've done.
Because I know your heart is not to water down the gospel.
No. Our right. heart is to be strategic. This one was really about trying to understand this everyman kind of blue-collar guy that had a relationship with God but was just burnt out.
Yep.
And he felt like he had lost faith in the church and lost faith in God really seeing him and being there for him. So it's kind of that skeptic that's outside the church walls that we want to reach.
Well, you do a great job of that, and it reached into my chest and punched me in the heart in the first 3 minutes. It's a great movie, and it will be in theaters February 23rd, and you can actually get tickets now at ordinaryangels.movie.
Growing up in poverty has never been easy for children, but with the added challenges of the pandemic, conflict, and natural disasters, families around the world are facing an unprecedented food crisis. Unfortunately, those who are already hungry are now even more desperate. But by sponsoring a child through Compassion, you can help provide life-sustaining essentials such as food and clean water. And with your compassionate support, that child can not only survive, but also flourish. You can find out how and choose a child to sponsor when you click on the Compassion banner at wayfm.com.